Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, TGIF. Thank God we got through another week, and what a week it's been. What a week it has been. We have had the first conservative victory in the United States of America. Well, for a very long time now, we've had the first conservative victory in months and months and months. And I don't have to tell you what that victory is, but I have a question to ask you. Other than the Savage Nation and WorldNet Daily, and Breitbart.com, which media outlets have covered this tremendous and extremely important conservative victory that I announced on this show yesterday? The answer is none. Not Fox News, because as you well know, Fox News is really Shepard Smith News. It is CNN of 5 years ago, disguising itself as a conservative outlet. I wish I could say otherwise. I like the people on Fox News. I think they're wonderful people. I have no axe to grind with them. They're giants, and I'm a little David, and they're the Goliath. It doesn't give me pleasure to say this, but they have moved so far to the left that it just pains me to have to tell you. I don't know what's happened to them. I certainly wouldn't expect CNN or MSLBGT to cover this victory of conservatism. So where are we going to turn when we want to celebrate a good news story such as the one I told you about in the Savage Nation yesterday? Why Matt Drudge didn't cover it is beyond me. Matt's a great guy. He should have covered it. It's certainly a bigger story than a lot of the junk that you see every day on most of the websites. I mean, we read these stories everywhere, every day, right? Why wouldn't you want to read Savage Beats Care on Fees lawsuit? That's a huge victory. It's up on michaelsavage.com. Michael Savage plaintiff versus counsel on American Islamic Relations, Inc., order denying defendant's motion for attorney's fees and costs. That's a huge deal. It didn't happen by accident. It happened in a federal court. You'd think it'd be covered by the conservative media, but they won't. Now, the question is why. That is the question I'm directing to you today as an opening gambit on the Savage Nation. Why would they not cover the story? Here are a few other stories from the wires and from the services around the world. Condemning Islamic terrorism banned on Marine training base. Yes, you heard it right. A U.S. Marine training base at Camp Lejeune has banned any bumper sticker that condemns Islamic terrorism. Now, notice what I said. Not a bumper sticker that condemns Muslims, but a bumper sticker that condemned Islamic terrorism. A lawsuit was filed against two officers at North Carolina's Camp Lejeune Marine Base for banning a civilian worker, a 25-year Marine, whose son was killed on the USS Cole, from publicly condemning Islamic terrorists. The lawsuit was filed by the Thomas More Law Center on behalf of Jesse Nieto after so-called base officials first ordered this man to remove bumper stickers from his private vehicle, then banned the vehicle from all federal installations nationwide. This is an amazing story. According to the lawsuit, which you can read about on WorldNet Daily, Lieutenant Colonel James Hessen, the base traffic order officer, ruled that the decals on Nieto's vehicle were offensive and were asked to explain. He said, "It's just what I think," the complaint states. Lawyers for the Thomas More Law Center said Nieto served in the Marines for 25 years, including two combat tours in Vietnam. His youngest son, Mark, and 16 of Mark's shipmates were killed, murdered, destroyed, disappeared from the earth on October 12, 2000 by Islamic terrorists who bombed the USS Cole in Yemen. Mr. Nieto has worked as a civilian employee at Camp Lejeune since 1994. Now, his bumper sticker said various anti-terrorist things, such as "Remember the Cole, 12 October 2000, or "Islam equals terrorism, and we died, they rejoiced." He was then ticketed by the Marines on the base. Now, you got to understand something. Other automobile-mounted slogans such as Confederate flags with "If this offends you, you need a history lesson" are allowed, or a Darwin fish which mocks Christianity is allowed, or sexually explicit symbols such as silhouettes of nude women are allowed, such as one with "Your child may be an honor student, but your driving sucks," and several versions of cartoons are permitted. But anything that says anything against Islamic terrorists has been banned by the new politically caponed U.S. Marine Corps. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website to go to. I am here for you today on Rock and Roll Friday, and before I come back, well, I'm not taking a break. Don't get nervous. It's only 12 after the hour. I've just gotten warmed up. Play a little rock and roll, would you? Play "Church Bells Are Ring," blah, 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 on the Savage. Now, the reason the church bells are ringing, especially in Mexico, is because Mexico City has decided to give out Viagra to men 70 years and older. Play it a little louder. Great story. Mexico City Mayor Marcelo Ebrard says the city is implementing the plan to give out Viagra to men 70 years and older because, quote, "Sexuality has a lot to do with quality of life and our happiness." Hurrah! So Mexico City's mayor is going to give out Viagra to men 70 years and older because sexuality has a lot to do with quality of life and our happiness. City Health Secretary Armando Ahued said Thursday that the government will start handing out doses of one or two Viagra, Levitra, or Cialis pills on December 1st. Celebrate in Mexico. They will be distributed at three centers that specialize in sexual health for the elderly. The men will receive medical examinations before receiving the pills. I don't want to go there. An estimated 112,000 men 70 or older live in the federal district, which has a population of 8.7 million. Some 20 million people live in the greater Mexico City area. So there it is. Now, why do I tell you about this story? Why not? I think it's a pretty amazing story. I mean, really, when you think about it, if you were 70 years and older, don't you think Obama should give you free Viagra? I really do think so, honest to goodness. That I think Obama should follow the lead of the Mexico City mayor and give out free Viagra, Cialis, or Levitra to any man in America over 70. He can start with John McCain. I think Obama should invite McCain to the White House for a reconciliation meeting, and he should say, "John, even though I said horrible things about you during the campaign, just to show I meant no harm and just to show I really appreciate you, I'm giving you a free bottle of Viagra, 30 pills a month, John." I want to see if John the schmuck laughs, because he no doubt would laugh at something like that since he has no brains, in my opinion. What do you want to talk about here? What media outlets other than the Savage Nation or WorldNet Daily covered this tremendous conservative victory? Answer, none. San Francisco, KNEW. Dave, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. Actually, I'm calling from Oakland that I now sort of affectionately call Brokeland. I know that you have your pet name for San Francisco. Anyway, my comment is...
Oh, Oakland, California, under Mayor Ron Dellums, is now called Brokeland. That's interesting. Well, yeah, okay, so what's going on in Brokeland?
Well, you know, looking at my paychecks every month, and I'm a young guy trying to raise a family... I have 1 2-year-old and another on the way, and in reading your book, Psychological Nudity, which I love, and my little girl loves Teddy on the front. She knows that that's Teddy.
That's sweet.
It occurs to me that another great impact that you can have and that your show can have across America is to encourage young fathers, especially like me, to call. Because I know that you have a lot of advice.
No, you know, you're raising a very interesting point. I am sort of like a father figure to millions of younger guys who have nowhere to turn, whether their fathers have died or whatever, or they were raised by a single mother. I really respect young men who get married and have children. I think that is the toughest and most noble job that a man can have on planet Earth, especially in times that are so questionable, especially with the fears raging through America today about the socialism that is hanging in the air like a lead balloon, because we understand that the arc of civilization requires propagation. And the fact of the matter is a lot of white men are afraid to have children. They become total punks and cowards. Or they only want pleasure. Or they are so narcissistic they don't want to give up a night's sleep. Or they don't want to, you know, their old lady to lose her abs or something. Because they're ultimate materialists. Having children is a sacrifice. But it's the most worthwhile sacrifice the world can imagine, Dave. Now, I don't know what to add to it than that. I mean, you want specific ideas that I have about childbearing. You know what? I have several. But no man has got a roadmap for this. I'll tell you what, Dave. First of all, I'm sending you another free copy for Christmas of Psychological Nudity so you can give it to somebody or save it for your child. You know, I have only 500 copies of the first printing, first edition left. I cannot believe it. I've ordered a first printing, second edition, but you're getting a free copy. But what kind of advice do you want?
Well, it's not specific advice, but I just want guys like young fathers like me to know, look, yeah, it's tough, but it can be done. And you need to raise boys like boys, and you know, you need to raise girls.
Look, I'm not going to mention names. I went to a conservative young man's home last night here in Los Angeles who put on a party, a conservative party, where about 80 people there with a lecture by someone I won't mention who. He has four young children. He's a great guy, certified great conservative. He has four children. There's a whole revolution going on in this country, Dave. The problem is you don't know it, because all you see is gay this, gay that, gay this, gay that, minority this, minority that, gay this, gay that. You don't see anything about young families, white, black, brown, or anything else, do you? You ever see any stories about young fathers and mothers trying to raise children? Never. They're obsessed with gay this, gay that, gay this, gay that. Because the governor can gay you nowhere, and the mayor can go gay somewhere else. Thanks for the call. I'll be back. It is the Savage Nation live across America. Live across America. So there's a lot of stories out there, but to me, the biggest story is my story. And I really have to tell you, I'm quite surprised that CARE's attempt to extract cash from Michael Savage was rejected by a federal judge who happens to be a bona fide liberal. To me, it has all the elements of a story. Liberal judge sides with conservative host. That's dog bites. That's man bites dog. You know what I'm saying? That's exactly what newspapers used to publish. Or Savage beats CARE on fees motion. That's, again, born story for newspapers, television, yet not touched by anyone in the media. And I think that the reason I'm hammering it is twofold. One, because I'm happy for me, happy for America, happy for the truth, happy for freedom. And two, I want you to finally understand what you really have in the media out there. I mean, I think you really need to come to terms with what is really going on in the media and how you've been gulled by a lot of people who tell you they're conservative when, in fact, they are anything but conservative. You have to decide that if they're withholding a story like this because, A, they don't like me, or I'm their competitor, or I'm on a no-buy list, or I'm a blacklisted guy by the... What does that tell you about these people who hide under the banner of the flag? They tell you that they're the big guy. They're out for you. They're looking out for you. They're looking out for nobody, idiot. They're looking out for themselves. Don't you get it? I did an analysis of where my books are selling the most in America, and this is very telling. You know, state by state. California is number one. This is amazing. New York is number two. Texas is number three. And Florida is number four. Would you believe that? That I would have thought New York would be a bigger audience. But apparently, California is a bigger audience than New York. And then the third, which is a surprise to me, is Texas. Why would this basic original New Yorker be so appealing to people in Texas? Answer, because I speak like they do. Not in accent, but in thought processes. We're the kind of guys that would get along with each other, you know, matter where we found ourselves. That's all. Anyway, here I am. So last night in L.A., I went to I'm not going to mention names. It's unimportant. There was a lecture, it was a house party for 80 people, very good catering, and most of the people were conservative, there were about 80 people there in someone's house, and it was very nice. And a guy gave a lecture on the myth of global warming, fundamentally. Not so much that there's not a slight heating up of the Earth owing to a natural processes such as sunspots, but that invoking the Kyoto Protocols would destroy Western civilization. And this came from a certified liberal scientist who says it's insanity to go that direction of the Kyoto Protocols. And he was challenging Al Gore. Al Gore, of course, will not respond to any debates. You understand? So I enjoyed it very much. The tortellini was particularly good. The salami was very good. The lavash was very good. The beer was very good. There was one other local talk show host there. And I went up to him and I said, "Hi, I'm Michael Savage. How are you?" All he did was give me like a limp hand, and he cavorts as a conservative, and like, and walked away. So I said, "All right, so he's jealous or competitive. I don't care. I didn't take it personally." I asked about him. He said, "Oh no, a guy I know says I've gone up to him at social gatherings in L.A. He goes to a lot of them. He said I've told him jokes. The guy gives you a dead face and walks away." I said, another one, another false conservative in the media, who was kept on for God knows why. Anyway, here I am. It's not so much to, bellyache about things. It was filled with... What I like about parties like that, it's like the ones I used to do when the kids were young. The kids were there. There was the infant sleeping in one bedroom and the three young ones running underfoot, back and forth, running around, having fun. I love that kind of thing where it's a mixed generational thing from the grandfather to the grandchild, and all sorts of things are going on. I mean, I used to do that when we were young. It's weird to me. It's like a conservative hippie thing going on. I see the future, and the future's not so dim. You may see liberalism in the forefront, which it is right now because of Obama and his minions, but I see beyond that. I see what's coming beyond that. Most of these people make movies in Hollywood, and some of them are very high up the food chain. And I am telling you that I see 5 years down the line, one of these old mean bullies are gone from Hollywood. The old mean, horrendous bullies who hate families, when they're gone, I see the future, and the future is extremely conservative, very family-oriented, and extremely patriotic. I see movies like that coming out very soon, and I see America moving to the right.
Savage.
It is the one and only Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, 1-800. I'm not giving you the number. I'm holding it back. There's no room anyway. You ask yourself why they'd run stories like that. Retail sales sink. A corporation announced financial results. And they don't talk about the fact that Michael Savage won a major victory in a liberal court. This is absolute propaganda, what's going on in the country today. You're living through brainwashing that, through political correctness or brainwashing. That's what that is, in a totalitarian manner. But wouldn't you expect to see some stories that come out on the other side published somewhere, particularly in so-called conservative outlets? I would. I mean, they're doing me a favor in a way, because the more they deny these stories and I tell you about them, the more you start to question their validity and the more you listen to me. So keep it up, guys. I hope my enemies keep it up. Especially the fake conservatives who wrapped themselves in the flag. All the Bush lovers. All of the Bush lovers who kissed his shoes for all these years. They're going to be out of business within 6 months to a year. There's no reason for them. Who's going to keep this up listening to them? Tied themselves to Bush and McCain. Who cares what they have to say? Pittsburgh Ralph, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. I'd like to congratulate you that the American court system has finally worked for the American people, yourself, and not only yourself, but California. They have listened.
I think it has, and I think it should give people hope that if they have a legal grievance, they shouldn't worry too much if it gets into certain judges' hands, because some of these judges are genuinely judicious.
Michael, can I ask you a question?
I hope it's not a bad one, sure.
No, but in my mind,
you got to understand, I'm a very defensive guy. My grandmother, may she rest in peace, was from the old country. If you ask my grandmother, "How are you?" you know what she'd say to you? "How should I be?"
Same type of background.
I try to figure that out all my life. What do you mean, how should I? Because they came from a dictatorship where it could have been a government agent inspecting you or someone. What kind of question is that to a person from the old country? How are you? It has no meaning to them.
They were miserable.
They were miserable 24/7 for 1,000 years. What do you mean, how are you? I'm miserable. It's horrible. It's dark. There's pogroms. There's no food. The children have scurvy. What do you mean, how am I? I'm horrible. It's terrible. So they, how are you? Figures that you're a government agent. So she'd ask you how I should be. How should I be?
Well, they're just asking for accountability. Maybe the Supreme Court is our last resort for constitutional accountability. I don't know.
My friend, have you read, I believe it's the First Amendment, which says, the Congress shall make no laws which establish religion or inhibit it, something to that effect?
Yes, sir.
Nor any laws which inhibit a free press or free speech. Now, can you explain to me how Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and Charles Schumer, tremendously wonderful liberals, don't even understand their own Constitution and First Amendment?
Well,
do you realize that the Fairness Doctrine goes right in the face of the Constitution when it says we shall abridge laws of free speech, we shall control what people can say? Do they have any idea what they're doing?
Obviously, our founding fathers knew what they were doing.
Our founding fathers knew that the despots like Charlie Schumer, who crawled out of a sewer in New York, and Dianne Feinstein, who swam out of a shopping cart somewhere in Beijing, obviously, would come along one day to try to destroy this country's freedoms. And I got news for you. Let them bring it on, because they're going to embarrass themselves, and hopefully there'll be an impeachment proceeding against both of them.
I totally agree.
Ralph, what else are you calling about today?
You had an interesting point earlier. You just
want a free book. So name one story that's in it that you want.
I ordered your book, as a matter of fact.
Did you get it yet?
Shipped out yesterday, and
You're going to be one of the 500 people who got the last of the You know, there's never going to be another first printing first edition. I can't believe it. I'm serious. I mean, it's amazing. I never thought we'd sell it out. Never.
Well,
thank you for the call. I'm in a sweat already. I broke out in a sweat. It's early in the day already. I'm sweating 39 minutes after the hour from head to toe. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Maybe it's L.A. I can't wait to go home, but there's a heat wave on the West Coast, which I got hives on my right. Maybe it was the fish for lunch, the shrimp. I don't know what it was. I'm in someone's house, and the housekeeper cooked lunch. It was so good. I always overeat when the food is good. I looked at my hand. It looked like I had like ringworm from the lunch, like white blotches all over my right arm. I don't know. I react. It could have been the hot Mexican sauce. Who knows? Portland, Oregon. Ann, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah. I just wanted to comment, Dr. Savage, that the reason the mainstream media isn't talking about your groundbreaking victory over care is because they're all too PC. Even the supposed conservatives are too PC. They're just not going to go near it. It's not politically correct to do so. And I did not have the opportunity to hear your story yesterday because I was not able to listen. So I'm sure I speak not only for myself but for thousands of others. If you could please repeat exactly what happened, because I could use the bright spot.
All right, let me ask you something, Ann. You have access to a computer?
I do.
Please go to michaelsavage.com. I've got two lead stories on the top left. CARES attempt to extract cash from Michael Savage rejected. And the ruling itself, it's a two-page legal ruling. For those of you who like law, and I think law is a big deal in America today, go and look at the actual finding by Judge Susan Ilston, where she says, having considered the standards set out by the case law and considering the pivotal criterion of the purposes of the Copyright Act, this court finds in its discretion that attorney's fees are not warranted in this case. Accordingly, the court denies defendant's motion. She threw out CARES motion for approximately $180,000 in attorney's fees. That's a huge ruling.
It's fantastic.
It's a huge ruling, and not only is there a lot of money involved, but there's a lot of principle involved. And I cannot believe that other talk shows aren't making a big deal of it. I can't believe it.
Front page. It's legal, just for the legalities of it.
It's precedent-setting. Thank you for the call. I agree. It's a big story. 1-800-449-8255. Relatives, please don't call. No, I don't have any relatives who listen to the show, apparently. I never hear about anyone I know who listens to it. They all make believe they don't listen to the show. It's terrible when you're famous in a family, and they get mad at you for your success. They would rather that you're a junkie in a rehab than... I know a guy who has a brother He's a talk show host. I don't really know him personally. But he's not a bad guy. He's on another station. He's very liberal. When I used to be on a station, he's a nice guy. He has a brother who's a junkie. And this guy knows exactly what it's all about. If you were if I were, let's say, a junkie in rehab and amounted to nothing in my life, the relatives would love me. Oh, look at that poor Michael. I never got anywhere. How terrible. Let me see if I can help him. But if you're successful, they don't want to know you. It's like it's a law of reversal here. All your life you strive to achieve something, and when you do, you write your first book. Oh, yeah, really? No kidding. Yeah, well, I like Stephen King. That was what I heard the first book I published 30 years ago. And my book was really a fine book, and it went very far. Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, 1972. I was so proud of myself. And may he rest in peace. I swear to God, I brought it into my father's market. I think my father was dead already. He had died so young. But a relative was still living, who I love to this day. I have nothing against him. I show him the book. I traveled all, like, 6,000 miles. Have you seen my new book, Uncle? Yeah. He said, how much do you make a book? He looked at it like a piece of herring. He opened it up. He said, how much do you make a book? You make a dollar a book. I couldn't believe what I had heard. Everything was dollars and cents. It wasn't that way for me. Well, at least then it wasn't. I mean, things have changed for me now a little bit more, but I'm almost going back to the way I was then. It's not all about the money. There are certain things in life that transmute dollar value, like children, like having children, like raising children, and seeing the next generation emerge. And I want to talk about children. I got 2 minutes here. Because a young man called earlier, and he asked me to talk about children. Now, suddenly, I'm the resident expert on children. But you know what? I'm as good as any, because I have children who are adults, and they're both wonderful people and fine people. And the fact of the matter is, I'm as good an expert as any. I have found in my life that most of the PhD experts on children are either gay or crazy and were never married. Or if they were married, they either tried to kill their wife or were in rehab for a few years and then came out and went into psychotherapy to find out why they killed or attempted to kill. And then they washed it all away and suddenly they're experts on child rearing. I mean, I'll tell you, that's what I found. So I'm as good a source as any on how to raise a child. You want to hear the number one rule? It's really simple. I remember when I had my first child. I had been living in the islands at that time. I flew all the way home, 6,000 miles when my father died, to the funeral. And I took my little baby with us. I mean, you know, it was like an infant. It was terrible. I had a reason to come home to that. But you can't pick things in life. Things happen. So after the whatever, you know, you go to the house and you whatever and drink and we're sitting and talking. I remember asking one of my uncles, who incidentally did not have children himself, but he was not a bad guy. Somehow I loved him, and I thought he knew everything. But he never had kids himself. So I said, well, really, I don't know the rules. How do you raise a child? What are you supposed to do? I didn't know how to raise a child. What do you think you know? I didn't know. I was not a baby. I mean, I was like 28 at the time, but it was still, by today's standards, I mean, I was like an infant. They don't have children today till they're 60 in Los Angeles. The guy is bald. He's got one foot in the earth, and he marries his masseuse or his Viagra provider, and then they have a baby, and the baby is 12 when he drops dead. I don't know how these kids are all going to survive with these fathers 60 years. All right, that's a second story. So I asked my uncle, well, how do you raise your child? I mean, what's the rules here? My uncle said something to me that I remember to this day. He said, you know what? There are no rules except one that you have to remember. Love them. If you love them, everything will work out. And you know something? He was right. I don't mean unconditional love, like if they smear fecal matter on the wall, you say, what a wonderful piece of art. We're not talking about that. We are talking about genuine love, which entails parameters of behavior that are acceptable. Now, when you get to the teenage years, all rules are off. You can't love them. It's like The Shining appears. At 11, it's your child and you love them. Then one day they come home and it's like Stephen King's The Shining. You don't know who's in the house. I'll tell you about that in another installment on the Savage Nation. Savage. Oh, I love this song. I remember I was in high school. I had a crew cut. Yeah, it brings back so many. Who remembers? What was I talking about? So I went to a mall this morning in L.A. Like, I got up early. I went to the Beverly Center. Seven stories of, like, the invasion of the body snatchers and a combination of that and the Stepford Wives. There was nobody there because I went so early. You ever go in these indoor malls, seven stories high, and there's nobody there but the shop girls, you know? I went in Skechers to buy shoes. Like, how does an old guy buy shoes in Skechers? Because they have the best arch support. I mean, short of one of those, like, cripple foot shoes, which they make for you with a mold in Queens, pharmacist shoes. I don't even know where to get them. When you stick your foot into a, and they it comes back, it's like $12,000, and it looks like you're walking around on black pillows. Remember those shoes and the therapeutic shoes? They were so ugly. They were like, how do you explain it? A man in those shoes instantly, impotent. Anyone who walked around in a pair of shoes like that was out of it. Forget it. He's off the map. You go to Mexico City for Viagra, Johnson. Huh? But today you can wear a useful shoe with an arch. And there was no one there. It's horrible. I had a little paranoid attack in that store. I don't like the zomboid thing. You go in those places and there's no life. There's nothing. There's no air. I get a little claustro. I couldn't wait to get out. And then here it is. It's already showtime before you know it. Then the show is over, and then it's a black hole. No, no, it's not true. I actually am enjoying a little bit more of my life, 2-3 minutes a day after a show I can enjoy. And I have outlets. I have outlets, not too many. Someone said, you know, I'm like my grandmother. I said to you, when you ask my grandmother from the old country who was here, how are you? She'd say to you, how should I be? Why? Because it was a given from her world. She was miserable. Everybody was miserable. It was 1,000 years of misery. No food, disease, people breaking into the village and raping and killing. They had no possessions, no hope to get out. They had nothing. So you ask a woman like that, how are you? Of course she'd say to you, how should I be? It was like an absurd question. I'm always miserable. In that sense, I'm afraid I haven't evolved very far beyond that. But then I start to think maybe this is the norm of humanity. I don't know that anyone's really happy except children. And the mad. I mean, who else is happy in this world? I'm not embarrassed to admit to you that I'm really not a happy person. Happy, happy, I'm happy. At 17, I remember writing in a journal. Yes, I kept journals as a young kid. And I wrote in the journal, there is no happiness, no perennial happiness. And Earth is only plateaus of joy, you know, little moments of pleasure. That's about it. Where do you find happiness on a regular basis unless you're on medication or something? I don't get it. Unless maybe I'm seriously depressed and should go into a treatment program. And then I'll go to some liberal wacko who will tell me the reason I'm not happy. If he's not wearing a dress and a wig and I didn't get an operation yet and become a woman. That's why you see half this. I mean, it's a crazy world out there when you look around. The people, what they're doing to become happy. I see shows like Taboo for National Geographic. They got young girls with rings coming out of every orifice and ear and nose. And they say it's just like every other society. And another one, she hangs herself by hooks at night. But it's okay. It's only a lifestyle choice. You hear? The woman belongs in a mental hospital. The people who do that should be arrested for sadism. No, not in America today. That's just a lifestyle choice. Then they compare it to some aborigine somewhere on Earth to show you it's okay because the aborigine does it. Because the aborigine scarifies him or herself. It's okay to do it in a modern world, you hear? In other words, we're moving, devolving as human beings. Instead of having the aborigine say, hey, look, Johnson, what you do, you don't scarify your old lady. You don't perform clitorectomies on your wife. Because that's like throwback behavior. The reason you don't do that is because it's barbaric. What you do is you move up. Now they're moving us back. Now I'm supposed to put a ring in my nose and hang my hand from a hook. I'm going to find happiness because I'm in severe pain. Anyway, that's just one man's opinion of the world. 1-800-449-825. You could see I'm in a loquacious mood today. Why? Because I feel good. Why do I feel good? Because the judge ruled in my favor. Is it only about me? No, 90% it's about my victory, but there's a little collateral benefit to you two. Why? Because if you can't figure out the collateral benefit for a liberal judge throwing a case out against a person who wanted to take me to the cleaners, then you don't even understand how big a deal this is. You know what I'm saying? That's it. 1-800-449-8255. Look how time is marching. I don't have time to develop an idea, thought, nothing. The time is speeding by so fast, and tomorrow I'm already flying, and I got a pack with the suit and the bags and the valises. I haven't seen the dog in 8 days. How is Teddy? Irene, if you're listening to the show, call the show at 1-800-449-8255 and have Teddy bark into the microphone. Is he still okay? Does he miss me? Does he even know he's with you and not with me? You know, you ever see what dogs do when you come home and you've been away for like a week? They're like the cats. Normally they're friendly, they roll over, you know, they lick you, you know, they play with. If you like ditch them even for half a day, they're like girlfriend's dogs. They're like, oh, really, boy, I'm not that interested, excuse me. Come on, Teddy, come on in. Oh, not right now, excuse me, I'm I'm not feeling very good. I have a headache. And they, like, march off into the other room with their head up. Dogs are amazingly sensitive that way. I knew a guy who was in the Navy on an aircraft carrier, and he said he'd have to send, like, he'd have to send socks from the Philippines back to, like, Fayetteville, North Carolina, to his wife, but unwashed socks in a baggie that she would throw at the dog so he'd remember his scent. I said, that's okay. That's a nice trick. I'll send dirty socks when the next time I go to Los Angeles. Then he says, then when I come home, the dog would immediately defecate in the hallway, like to show me how dare you leave me. No, that's why I like dogs, because they're overt. I don't like cats because they're covert. They're sneaky. Cats are like liberals to me. In other words, everything to do behind your back, like they take a dump behind the couch. A dog will do it right on the couch. A dog will lift his leg on the couch leg. A cat will do it in a sneaky little area somewhere, like on a book that you have in a library. You'll open it up and almost faint 3 months later. I don't have time to even take a call. I'm jammed up here with a loquacious. What has done this to me? What do I have to back up what I did today where I feel so? What is wrong? Oh, because the week's over and it was a rough week. And I had issues, and the issues are over, and I feel good, and it's Friday, and thank God, and there was a victory, and I had something good to talk about instead of everything negative. There's a lot of news stories here. I opened with one already. Condemning Islamic terrorism, ban the Marine training base. Great. Great. Maybe the Marines can start shooting themselves. Maybe Obama will tell Marines they have to shoot each other, in other words, in order to defend America, that they should never even say the word Islamic terrorism. In fact, they should start shooting each other to show what good Marines they are. Acorn fires two who were probing embezzlement allegations. You hear this one? Huh. Saudi king meets with group of prominent U.S. Jews in New York. What's a prominent U.S. Jew? Let me see what a prominent U.S. Jew is. Ronald Lauder? Isn't he the cosmetic man? Why is he a prominent Jew? It's a rich Jew, not a prominent Jew. What do you mean, prominent Jew? What makes him prominent? That he's rich? Oh, well, by that definition, there's a lot of prominent people who are not rich.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Many stories, so many different stories, so many stories. This is everything but Orwellian. This is the opposite of Orwellian radio. Orwellian radio is Major League Network news. That's Orwellian radio. Orwellian television is ABC, CBS, NBC, and some of the others. How long freedom of speech will last in America is... it's up to you and me. The fact of the matter is, I don't think they have a chance to get to first base. I think it's an intimidation tactic by Feinstein, by Obama, by the entire left-wing apparatus. I think that they know that it could not pass constitutional muster, and I believe they're doing it to intimidate station owners in order to force, uncommercial dreck onto the airwaves that nobody wants to listen to. Like Air America garbage that nobody wants to hear, that failed. And they want station owners to say, freedom is coming, whatever they call it. I forgot, the fairness doctrine, which of course is the opposite of what it is the unfairness doctrine. It's telling you what you have to listen to. That's the But they know that they can't win, but it's an Orwellian trick by Pelosi and that gang. in order to get stations to carry liberals. That's all. I'm not really worried about it personally. And there's another reason. I told you my victory in the judge ordering denying the defendant's motion for attorney's fees and costs tells me that there are many truly judicious judges who are liberal, who say, okay, let's look at the law. I may not like the guy's politics, but wait a minute. Now, it violates the First Amendment to say he can't talk, or it violates the Constitution. I'm not going along with it. And I believe that the good liberals will come to their senses and understand they're going to usher in a nightmare here if they go along with this kind of nonsense. Leads me to the next story up on michaelsavage.com. And I thought it was interesting, but I'm not surprised by it. They did an analysis of who voted on the state's homosexual marriage ban. And it showed that the Chinese, although they all overwhelmingly voted for Obama, they overwhelmingly voted to ban gay marriage. Now, how is that? They're nervous. They can't figure it out. They did outreach to the Chinese community. They brainwashed them on Obama, Obama, Obama. He's good for welfare. He's good for immigrants. But when the Chinese got into the booth and they looked at it in Chinese, they said, no, I'm against homosexual marriage. They didn't know what to do. So they have to do more outreach to the Chinese. In other words, they have to beat them up mentally in order to get them to try to think twistedly, you know. People have an ancient culture. What are you going to tell them, that they don't know what they're doing? They want to marry like a chicken hanging in a butcher store? What are you people, nuts? You're not changing the world's mind because you think you're so wonderful. It's an interesting story. Chinese voted to ban gay marriage. SF shielded illegal alien murderer. It's a sad story. There's a picture of the 14-year-old kid, himself a Hispanic, stabbed to death with a sword by a 17-year-old who had been given so-called sanctuary by the mayor, any Tusum Newsom. And he was banned from deportation, the murderer, because he was too young. Yeah, we needed young murderers in the city. We didn't have enough old ones, so we needed a few young ones. So the city sanctuary policy ensured that we'd have a lot of young murderers waiting in the wings on the bench to learn how to kill, because the old ones were getting old, and since the old murderers were being protected, they had to protect the new wave, you know. Houston, Texas. Adi, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, maybe I can shed some light on the mystery why your book is so successful in Texas.
Well, I'd like to know.
I have the book right in front of me. I'm from Israel. I lived 15 years in New York. Now I live in Houston. So that could be one reason. I also wanted to tell you that I'm thinking of sending this book to my father-in-law, because he is a big Damon Runyon fan, and I think he'll enjoy it.
Oh, Damon Runyon. I know. You know how many people remember who he was? Where does your father-in-law live?
He lives in Israel.
You know, it's funny. If you say Damon Runyon today to the average American under the age of 70, they wouldn't know who you're talking about. But Damon Runyon was an intriguing writer, and it's funny you should mention it. He was a down-to-earth kind of writer, but he also had a certain flair and a flavor of language. Do you remember that he would give people monikers, for example, names? He would name them, like One-Arm Frank. That would be a Damon Runyon-esque kind of name, right?
That's right. That's exactly it. That's
it's very interesting. You know, I learn something on a regular basis on this show about my origins and about my thought structure. But if you look at the titles, The Chestnut Man, okay, One-Arm Frank, Sam the Butcher, those are Damon Runyon-esque like titles, actually, when you mention it. I didn't even think of it. It's very intriguing. In fact, the best stories in there are Damon Runyon-esque, you know. It's truly amazing to me. How do you know this if you're an Israeli?
Oh, well, come on. I mean, you know, we Israelis know a little bit. Well, my father-in-law worked on the sea. He's a seaman. He was 35 years on the sea, so he read a lot. And he actually turned me on to Runyon, maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, he was an Israeli who was also a merchant seaman?
That's right. Yeah, he was a chief electrician, and he rode around the world for 35 years, you know. And that's
on which shipping line, the Israeli shipping line?
Oh, he worked on a bunch of them, yes. You know, some of them have already gone down. But, yeah, he worked on most of them. They hop around different companies when they work.
How do you like living in Texas, Adi, as an ex-Israeli? How do you feel there?
Well, Texas is a pleasant surprise, I got to tell you. New York was very rough for us. You know, we were closet Republicans over there, or conservatives, rather. I like Texas. I think Texas is a pleasant surprise. We're also riding out this, economy wave here. Texas is not New York. We came down here with $200 about 5 years ago. Now I have a house and a car. You know, it's wonderful.
Isn't that amazing? And the people are very friendly, aren't they?
People are great, yes, they're great. They're
not as suspicious and like in New York. No, it's very interesting. People have biases against anyone outside of their own city, but the fact of the matter is Texans are great. Adi, I'm sending you a free copy of the book anyway. What the heck? Take another one. Go ahead. Wait, because you're sending it to your grandfather, your father over there. Free copy of Psychological Nudity. I'm going blind. I still can't see out of my right eye. People don't... I'm functioning like... But like Freud said... You know what Freud said? This is interesting. I'm all over the map today. You'll have to forgive me. Because I'm sort of a... I have an eclectic mind that's also capable of moving rapidly from point to point. And yet when I have to focus, there's nobody who can focus as well as me. I'm extremely capable of it when I have to, believe me. Whether it's driving a boat or writing something, I can focus. But some days I like to jump all over the map. And one of them is today, is a day like that. So I can go all the way from child rearing to a book, to a joke about being in a mall, to a food, to a rash on my arm, back to politics, to, you know, the court case. So what entered my mind just now, for whatever reason, I'll never figure it out, was I said to you, I still have limited vision in my right eye with the vitreous thing, is it doesn't mean anything at the end of the day. Because Freud said, psychologically now, someone said to Freud, what if you wake up one day and find out that you're crawling only on one arm and one leg, you know, psychologically? What do you do then? Freud said you crawl on one arm and one leg. That's the point about life. You're never going to be 100% on a regular basis, physically or mentally. And you know, this idea of perfectionism is what I'm getting at. I believe this perfectionism is a reflection of total insecurity. And I believe this whole generational thing about being perfect with the abs and the gym. You know, you're right around L.A., every street corner there's another gym. Pilates and Shmilates and yoga and a body and waxing and schmaxing and tanning. And you see the most imperfect neurotics in the whole world are in Los Angeles, all trying and struggling to be a perfect Roman being. They don't understand yet you can only be so much and you can only go so far and you can only look so good. And at the end of the day, you got to try to work on the inner self rather than the outer body. I am not saying that a fit mind doesn't need a fit body in which to function. I know that. I learned that when I was 15 years old and went to a gym. I started going to gym when I was 15. I remember there was the American Health Studios in New York. To this day, I remember it was one of the first chain gyms that opened. Before that, it was like grunting, burly guys with hairy arms who were all probably in the locker room, you know, the burly type that you didn't want to. But they all are big, you know, big guys, big on, you know, probably in the back locker and you didn't want to go in. But then this was like a commercial gym. And it was like clean with mirrors and like health pills, protein tablet. I ran to the American Health Studios, you know, and he's like, guys, like big arms, but at least you can go in the locker room without getting, you know, like in a jail, you know. Hard. So it was clean with the protein pill. But I remember to this day, after high school, I would like go down to Jamaica Avenue underneath the overhead train, the regularity tagline, and there was this gym and I would pump iron. So it's not that I didn't work out, but I remember reading the propaganda, the muscle magazines of those days, and one of them said a fit mind needs a fit body in which to work, which is true. I haven't forgotten that, but that's a little different than an obsession only with a fit body and a mind that's like mud, ear-to-ear mud, like Mudville. You know, that's what I see going on in this country today. Every guy works out. They all have, like, biceps. You ever see every party you go to? Like all the young guys, like they have like undershirts on with biceps. But I happen to know that even a fat guy with like natural strength could break their neck. That's the one thing I noticed, is that everybody, they have a bicep, they have a tricep, this, they stand puffed up. But it looks like if you leaned into them a little harder, you can knock most of them over. I like the basically natural, you know, strength guy who like eats scongeli and a lot of spaghetti and basically can give a wipe with the hand like a bear and knock them over. Never mind, I'm just rambling on and on. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is a horrible shame what's going on in the world right now. Not that Mexico City is going to give out Viagra to men 70 and older. That's a good idea. But if you look at another story I linked up on my website, michaelsavage.com, from the Christian Science Monitor, it says Saudis enlisting world leaders for global law to punish blasphemy. You hear what's going on in the world? We're being dragged into the Middle Ages. All the while in America, they're refocusing us on gay marriage. The whole world is moving down to the Middle Ages because the most intelligent, amongst the most intelligent groups in America happen to be the gay people. Let's clear the air. They are intelligent people by and large. They're very activist people. And they don't even understand by being focused solely on gay marriage, the country and the world is being devolved as a result of their not paying attention to the other important issues. And this is one of the heartbreaks I have on this show. And I've tried over and over and again over the years to say, don't you understand why these issues have been made so important to you? You are the people who can help lead this society out of the abyss. For example, to stop the tendencies toward Islamization or rules like blasphemy or rules that inhibit free speech, which will come back and haunt you one day. But instead, all you're doing is being focused on gay marriage. Don't you understand how important you are to the world? But they don't hear me. They've targeted me. They've painted me in a color that is never going to be any other color. And consequently, there's a divide that will never be healed. And there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm willing to live with it. I don't understand how they don't understand how they're being led around by their noses. Jeff in Sacramento, line 3, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you. You were talking about moods and the mind. And I was thinking you were talking about being unhappy or sad or maybe lonely or something like that. But doesn't that gain quiet to your mind? It makes you actually think more clearly as a...
Wait, hold on. You're losing me. What, being depressed?
No, not being depressed, but maybe you're sad or unhappy. You were talking earlier about, you don't always have to walk around being happy. And
no, I don't try to. I've given up trying. When I was 17, I realized it was a myth. Notice what the Constitution says. The U.S. Constitution says you have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those old dudes knew that all you could do is pursue it.
Exactly. But have you ever noticed that people that are really jovial, happy, laughing all the time, they're usually morons. They're not thinking clearly.
Well, they're not necessarily morons. They're usually fighting an inherent sadness within themselves, trying to put a good face on it. And I understand that. It's better than a morose attitude. But it's also a cultural thing. If you look at Russians, like old-line Russians, they're never happy. They're always like walking around real-time misery on their face. Even if they have a new Rolls Royce, they live in a $30 million house with like an 18-year-old Ukrainian wife, still dour, miserable-looking people. It's a cultural thing. Americans think they have to smile all the time.
That's right. But also, my point is that, it's like the old saying that love clouds the mind. But if you're in a different mindset,
Wait a minute. But hate clouds the mind pretty much, too. Any strong emotion clouds the mind.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. But I just find it, you were saying, I don't think that you're necessarily unhappy. I think some people would perceive that you're unhappy. But I think what you're doing is you're gaining the clarity of state of mind to have the mind that you have.
Well, here's what it is. I learned a long time ago not to seek happiness because I found it's a myth. And all it does is make you miserable. It's the old story of the more you reach for something, the further away it goes. It's an old rule you learned when you were 17 and you were trying to get girls to like you. The more you wanted a girl and the more you showed it, the less chance you were going to find one. And the minute you said, who cares, suddenly girls appeared in your life. Remember those old rules when you were still dating?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, guys know that the more you're desperate for something, women can almost pick it up like biochemically from you and they feel it like it's an ick factor. You're like, ugh. This guy really wants girls too bad. There must be something wrong with it. And they, like, don't want to know. So the same with happiness. Like, you can only want it so much, after which you become miserable pursuing it. So the best thing is to just accept the normal state of mankind, which is not necessarily depression or sadness, but it's not happiness. Happiness is not a normal state for mankind. It may be a normal state for children or for dogs, but it's not a normal state for the average human being.
That's right. But I wanted to thank you for your suggestions on books as well as your own books that I've read. But throughout the years, the books that you've suggested to read, I've read a lot of them, and I've enjoyed them very much.
I hear you very much. Now I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity, since you think I'm such an all-around intelligent guy. And it really is. I swear, when I turned the show on today, there were only 500 or so copies left of the first printing, first edition. I could have faked it with the second printing by saying reprint the first one and keep saying a first printing, first edition. I am so upfront with my audience, I didn't want to do that. So the next, set is going to be first printing, second edition. Same book. In fact, I took a typo out of the first edition. Anyone who can figure out which typo I found is going to get a free copy right now. In fact, I'd like to get a whole list of typos for the first printing, third edition, first edition, third printing. I found two typos. I only caught one of them. But it's still going to be a valuable book because there's nowhere else to buy it but here. That's it. That's all there is to it.
Savage.
Hey, la dee ding dong, a lang a lang a lang, boom ba lo, ba do ba do ba bay.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise.
It is the Savage Nation Friday edition, Rock and Roll Friday. This is known as Shaboom, right? Brings back another set of memories. Always another set of memories. Memories, dreams, and reflections. Michael Savage. Memories, dreams, and reflections. You know, it's almost blasphemous in America today to say that you have dreams and reflections. It's like communistic. It's so un-American to live like with a thoughtful mind. Maybe they can arrest you for thinking and feeling in America, for not like consuming something, like working on your abs or buying something. Welcome back to the program. Let's go to the callers at 1-800-449-8255. We have some good sound bites I didn't get to yet. We have the Savage Inquisition with the David bit. That was good. If Savage were on Larry King. Oh, I was supposed to be on tonight. I didn't go. I wonder why Michael Savage wouldn't go on Larry King to be skewered by the entire quinella there they were going to put up there for me. What stooge are they going to put on instead of me? I don't even care. Probably some failed talk shows looking for attention. Somebody make a moral. I may as well put on a Claribel outfit with a honk. There's the conservative talk shows. Hong Hong with the makeup with the red nose. Yeah, sure, I'll go. What else do we have today? We have Bill Ayers on Good Morning America. Why doesn't Fox give him a job? He could follow Shep Smith. Bill Ayers could follow Shep Smith on Fox. Hey, there you go. There's a good idea for a talk show host. They would just syndicate Bill Ayers. The Bill Ayers Show. The guy who, like, he said he wasn't a terrorist. He said they only put bombs in police stations and such, but he didn't want to kill people. That's what goes on Good Morning America. You hear what goes on? Local news report from Golden, Colorado, where city officials are considering banning public displays of religious symbols during the holidays. I guess they could put up a Karl Marx statue with holiday lights around Karl Marx's head. That would pass muster in Golden, Colorado. Amarillo, Texas. Paul, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, thanks, Mike. The Amarillo's just got rated recently the third most conservative city in the country. And about 8 months back, they tried to take you. Well, they replaced you with another conservative host, but he wasn't you, you know. And the city lost their mind. They set up a call-in line for you to, you know, call in and vent. And I just wish you could have heard some of the remarks that were left. And, you know.
Well, so you're saying they put me back on due to popular demand?
You weren't even off 2 months, and you were back on, because, yeah, they were tired of hearing about
That's amazing. Well, no, that's happened in other parts of the country where radio operators get chicken, and they say, oh, can't have him on, he's telling the truth. Let's put some fake conservative on, you know, someone who wraps himself in a flag and says that he's for George Bush and John McCain. Being an independent... Being an independent, Paul, has never been easy, even as a kid. You know that. But if Texas is not about independence, what is Texas about, Paul?
That's it. That's the spirit.
That's it. I would say independent-mindedness is what defines Texas and Texans. And they are a holdout in a way. They're a special breed down. It's very interesting to me that I had no idea until I looked at it demographically where, you know, you look at the country. Look at my show. It's on almost 350, I don't know how many, 380 stations. They say 8 to 10 million listeners. It's hard to say. And I looked at where my books are selling, and I found out that number one is California, number two is New York, number three is Texas, which I was surprised. There was a real, and number four is Florida. I'm only on one or two stations in Florida. I couldn't believe that. But apparently amongst the danging ballot people over there, these are the people who go to, like, you know, early birds with the bags inside their coats to take home the meatballs. Even they're buying my book for some reason. I don't get it.
Hey, can I say one last thing regarding food before you leave?
Yes, I do want to hear something about food from a Texan's point of view.
If you ever take a trip down I-40, and you know, you'll go right through the middle of Amarillo, there's a steakhouse on the east side.
No, we can't name the local restaurant, but you're saying it's really great steak, right?
No, well, they have a steak there that's, you know, about 4 pounds of meat, and it's a competition that you can try.
Is it called the Savage Steak?
they
you know, you have arrived when they name a dish after you or a drink. But they only name them after liberals or entertainers, Paul. Paul, I'm sending you a free copy of the few hundred of copies left of Psychological Nudity because you're such a great guy. You don't even have to know what's in it. That's all. That's all there is to it. San Diego, by the way, that's a huge, huge city. I beat everyone in town on the radio station down there. It's KFMB, right? I even beat the former mayor. Everybody in that city is minuscule, like Lilliputian compared to the Savage Nation. Kristen in San Diego, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to congratulate you on your wonderful victory in the court system.
You see, you heard about it in San Diego, but only through my show, right? The so-called conservative media wouldn't even cover the story.
So happy I came across your show on accident because I have
You mean today for the first time?
No. It's been a couple months, and it's been probably 3 months. And luckily, it gave me a brain during the voting, you know, so I didn't fall for the Obama-isms that were being thrown out.
Yeah, but now that it's over and Obama won because there are so many brainwashed fools in America, now we have to really rally behind the truth and the Constitution or we're really going to be in trouble because these people have a tendency to want a little dictatorship, and the only thing that's going to stop them are the life rafts called the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and we have to reassert that we are America. We're not the ex-Soviet Union or Canada or Cuba or Venezuela, you know what I'm saying?
Speaking. It's a privilege and an honor to get to listen to you. Your perspective is wonderful.
Why don't you tell that to Mrs. Savage? She ought to hear that. It'll come from you.
Don't talk about her more because she must be a very special woman.
No. I never bring the family into the show. That's one thing I don't do. Families don't appreciate you as much as audiences do because you get off the air, it's like, boom, the mic goes off. You come home, it's like, ordinary Joe. The only one who's there for you is your dog. And they take, you try to tell them what you did on the radio, oh, a big deal, you've been doing it 15 years out of a migraine, or my day was... No, that's the way, you know, it's like any other job to families. You don't understand what it's like in talk show business. No one really cares what you do in your family. They heard it already. How many times can they listen to you? No, it's a tremendous letdown. You ask anyone in talk radio, he'll tell you the truth. They come home and they think that their family's going to be their audience. The family could care less. The kids are watching TV if they're young. The wife is probably getting her nails done. Oh, listen what I said, and it was so brilliant, and they called me from telling me, yeah, all right, fine. Can you take the garbage out? Thanks for calling the show. But you got to get used to it. It's called humility. Ultimately, though, there's something to be said for dropping your ego and dropping your pride when you get around your family. It's not easy to do. It's called humility, my friend, because they're going to be the only... Tell me who's going to be there when you're in the emergency room, your audience or your spouse? Who's going to be there for you when your eye goes out and you're laying there after a CAT scan? Who's going to be out there when you got the gown on backwards and your privates are... You're trying to hide from the nurse because you're embarrassed. They're like, who's going to be there putting a cover over you, covering your nakedness, as it is that they're instructed to do in the Bible? Cover the nakedness of your father. Who's going to be there for you? Your audience or your family? So you better get clear that if they don't care that much about what you say on the radio because they heard it, that's okay because they're the only ones going to be covering your nakedness at the right time, you know. So you got to understand how to flow, flex, and be a human being, in other words. This is an amazing show, whether you know it or not. I'm in a state of mind that's rare. I used to get in these states of mind regularly, but not for a long time. I've been depressed over the election, over Obama, over McCain, over Bush. I feel liberated. I feel as though I've been let out of a cage. Now that I don't have to pay any attention to Bush and McCain anymore, and Obama, I feel liberated. I feel like a free man, that I can think again. Let McCain go on Jay Leno till they throw him out. No one's going to remember that man in 3 months. This guy is such a fool. He's showing what a fool he is by what he's doing after the election. How are you? I'm sleeping like a baby. I sleep 2 hours and I get up and I cry for 2 hours. Oh, how funny. Who wrote that for you, John? Which guy with Coke bottle glasses and curly hair wrote that for you, John? So you think you're funny? They love you? You're like a pathetic guy, John. They're making you think they like you because they used you, you idiot, you. It's sad to watch this. I just hope Cindy doesn't ditch him for the... let me not go there. I just hope it doesn't happen. I hope we don't read in 6 months, you know, it's all over. Why? Incompatible. What happened? He was a schmuck. I had no idea. I married a fighter pilot and he wound up as a bad comedian. That's it. Boom. 1-800. Thank God I don't have to drive home through the grapevine in Bakersfield. High winds down here. Look at the weather. I'm watching, why I feel good is another reason. Normally during a show, I have TVs on and I'm watching the cable channels to see what the moral, like, Brett Hume. There's Brett Hume. Hi, I'm Brett Hume. What is that? I'm a Brett Hume. How are you? I'm a Brett Hume. How are you, Brett? That guy looks like he sleeps in a tie and suit. Like droopy eyes. Hi, I'm Brett Hume. How are you? Hi, Brett. What do you do? I'm a Brett Hume. Yes, I'm Brett Hume. How are you? Are you Brett Hume? Yes, I'm Brett Hume. I'm a Brett Hume. I used to work for the president. I'm Brett Hume. I'm Brett Hume. I'm Brett Hume. The president respects me. Brett Hume. So I don't even watch that anymore. What I have on now is like the Weather Channel. A, the babes I like because like they wear bad outfits, which is funny to see. Like the Weather Channel girls are really funny. They're like ordinary good-looking women. And some of them are like cute faces. They look like cute, like a girl next door. They're not particularly beautiful because nobody would take that job if they're looking to become an actress. This is like the last, this is where, as far as they're going to go. The guys wear like suits from, leftover suits from Tonga. I mean, these were suits that were remained from like Macy's 3 years ago. They were sent to Tonga and Fiji and Tahiti. They didn't even sell there, and then they get sent back in remnant merchandise to like green rooms of the Weather Channels around the world, like in Syria. And that's the kind of suits these guys wear. You know, like they're behind with the flap in the back. You could see it's like one size too small. They don't know to wear a little oversized on TV. Otherwise, they make even a good-looking guy look like he's out of shape. But the girls are saying they wear like bad pants suits from 1970. It's almost like disco-era outfits that they wear. And the jewelry is from QVC. Like, again, recycled. They went from QVC. It went from like Macy's to QVC and a remnant. Then they couldn't even sell it on QVC. They sold it to Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, the Marquesas, and the natives looked at it and rejected it. They didn't even want the trinkets. So some guy came down there from Brooklyn. He was like praying, all right, I'll buy it all. Give me the whole lot for $12, $12.50 in a seashell. He buys it back from them in the islands, and now he sells it to the Weather Channel for the girls to wear. I don't feel crazy anymore because I'm watching the Weather Channel. And I'm not watching Brett Hume. I'm Brett Hume, a Wolf Blitzer. I hate those guys. I can't stand looking at them. Those puppets were driving me crazy. And all they were video puppets. So now I'm watching the weather. And there's like heavy wind advisory for tomorrow when I'm flying. So I have that to keep me up tonight. Heavy wind to it's going to be wind blowing through Santa Barbara and through L.A. and over the Van Nuys where the airport is. So I'm thinking of like delaying the flight now till 2 o'clock. So I was to leave at 1. Now I got to call up the telepilot to leave till 2. But what if it's like winds coming over in the canyon. I'm going to fly above it. But even if you fly above it, it buffets above. And they said it was going to be a little rough going over the Grapevine, and it's more than a little rough. But I want to get home to the dog because otherwise I'm afraid he'll make on the floor. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Got someone sneaking round the corner. Could that someone
be Mac
be
tonight?
Mac the knife?
I don't like this song particularly. I never cared for it. I didn't know who Mac. I didn't understand it at all. Turn it off. I never liked Mac the knife. I didn't understand it. I like Beyond the Sea, frankly, if you have that. But if you don't have it, well, that's a different story already. That's another story. This has a little poetry to it. The other one, you have to know what he's talking about, Mac the Knife. I used to watch it when I turn it off. It's in conflict. Anyone over 40 can't double think. They can only hear that or me. You put two things on, they call a psychiatrist. They can't multitask. The youngsters can multitask and achieve nothing. They could do everything at once and achieve nothing. They can't write a story. They can't speak a literate sentence. They can't dress themselves. All they do is they got nice abs, and they can multitask. That's about the extent of it. But who said you have to multitask? To do anything right, you shouldn't multitask. Sit and focus on what you're doing and do it right. What multitask? It's a mark of a deranged mind, multitasking. It's ADD, multitasking. Houston, Judy, you're on the Savage Nation. Judy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Did you say Judy?
Yes, talk, go, you're on.
Michael, I'm in the kitchen. I was running the sink water, and I couldn't hear you.
Well, thanks for sharing, and how did it come out? Did you go to the... What's on your mind?
Okay, I just want to tell you, Michael, that every single night that you're on, I have you tuned in for the whole 3 hours, although I'm kind of sad now. You're getting off.
This has been I almost broke. I almost got a palpitation. Could you hit the killer on that part of it, please? Do me a favor. Oh, please, God. Hello, Michael. Listen, Is that me? I was in the kitchen. I had the washing machine on. And I just came from the bathroom. You'll have to excuse me. And by, I don't mean anything by it. Just not the kind of call that is an audience builder. Let's put it to you that way. It's more like a party line. Hello, Michael. Are you there? All right. Look, here's the problem. Here's the problem. Is that many of you think you know me because I'm such a personable guy. And I have a gift that I can talk, and you think that I'm talking directly to you. You're sitting, and it's like coming out of the speaker, and you think you know the guy. That is a gift. It's rare. I got to admit, it's a very rare thing. And when God made me, he broke the mold, as they used to say. The fact of the matter is nobody in radio can touch me in terms of connecting with the audience. Nobody. There are people, yes, it is true, with bigger audiences, and maybe you like them, and God bless them. I'm only on a few hours a day, and there's a large spectrum of people, and you got to listen to them all. But that's not what I'm saying. In terms of reaching out through the speaker and grabbing people, I've known this from the day I began. It's a special thing I have, and that's why people call me up and tell me they went to the bathroom and what I can give them to help. You know, you got to be careful here. If I can delve into my subconscious and I do it with controls, you start doing it, you'll wind up in a nut house. Chico in Indiana, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage.
Hello. What's on your mind, my friend?
Listen, I want to tell you that you've helped a lot of ex-gang members. And
really? How did I do that?
Oh, just by the way you talk, your straight talk. And let me tell you, when I was growing up, we have uncles like you who try to knock sense into our heads.
Isn't that beautiful? I got to tell you, man, I love this call. I love the call because we got cultural differences here. We got language differences here. We got age differences here. And look how you are saying to me that we communicate. That's the most important thing.
Dr. Savage, if you sat in my kitchen table, you'd be just like one of us. Let me tell you. That's amazing.
That is amazing. Well, look, I'm not going to start now by backtracking and say I understand why you did it. But the fact is I understand why you did it. I can understand why some kids wind up in gangs who didn't want to be there. But they had to be there. They'd be dead. That's another story. Not everybody's in the gang is an evil person, and not everybody's not in a gang is a nice person. We understand that as well. Am I correct, Chico?
Correct, sir. Let me tell you, I had to come to Indiana to get out of the state, but I work with gang members here in Indiana, Indianapolis. And I turn the radio on, and I make them listen to you.
That's amazing. Well, it's because I reflect. Remember, I'm an immigrant son, Chico. Although from a different culture, I am an immigrant son, so I still see America in a sort of distant way. It's not like I'm Father America. I'm part of something, but I'm also not really there yet. You know what I'm saying, Chico?
Yes, sir. Let me tell you.
There's other elements as well, which transcend culture, race, age, language. And those are traditional family values, Chico. I think you'd have to agree with me that when I say that 7 out of 10 black people, for example, voted against gay marriage, and 7 out of Hispanic people voted against gay marriage, even though they may have voted for Obama, it's because their family values and my family values happen to be the same.
That's right. That's correct.
And tell me, what is more fundamental to any man who's really a man other than his family? There's nothing more fundamental.
That's right.
Do you teach the kids, the young guys who are in gangs, that the real tough job is to be a father rather than to be a killer?
That's right, to be a man. To be a man.
Yeah. Any guy could bury his heart and shoot another man and think he's a man. But you know what it takes to be a man? Is not to shoot another man, but to help another man. The healer is a greater man than the killer.
That's right, Dr. Savage.
Do you teach them these kind of things?
I do. And like I say, for 3 hours at night, you teach them in some garages sometimes. In the garage, put the radio on, and there you are talking.
I love it, man. I really love it. I wish I could be there with you drinking a beer right now, but I'm unfortunately sitting there drinking in the computer screens. Chico, let me send you a free copy of a book you're going to love. Maybe you'll read some of the stories to the boys, Psychological Nudity, some of them. You know, I got to tell that story. Chico, stand alone. I'm sending you a book. In the house I'm in, there are some people here from El Salvador and Guatemala who work around the house. The woman asked me for the book. She knows me. She read half the book in one night. She came back. She said, I love your book. I said, why? She said, because many of those stories are like my life right now. I couldn't believe it. I said, because I grew up poor. She said, I understand that. Like the pants.
Savage.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. This song goes out to the men over 70 in Mexico City. We learned today that Mexico City's governor or mayor is going to give out Viagra to men 70 years and over. Because sexuality has a lot to do with quality of life and our happiness. Men in Mexico City, Vaya con Dios. This song goes out to you. It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. I'm Michael here driving the FA-18 Hornet of radio. Trying to do a few turns without crashing or careening. And you're welcome to call the program at any time if you can get through. Good luck to you, because I doubt it. Because I'm in a good mood. It's Friday. You're in a good mood. The election's over. We don't have to pay any attention anymore to the clowns. Let them do what they all do, which is rob us blind. Oh, yeah, you thought when Obama became president your life was going to get better. He was going to give you a new Camaro. You were going to all have a new Camaro in your driveway. It's unbelievable. Everything he promised, they backtracked already. Harry Reid said today, we're not really going to bail out GM. We can't afford it. Then he said, we may not be able to grant amnesty to the illegals. We can't afford that. I told you that at the end of the day, these are front men for the real powers that be, who I don't know who they are. There's probably some guy in an undershirt in New York on 2nd Avenue runs the world. I never met him. But it looks to me like there's one guy somewhere on 2nd Avenue over a tailor shop in an undershirt who sits on a pillow and looks out at the street, and he knows what's going on. He makes a call, and boom, they do what he wants. I have this fantasy about the whole world. God forbid it should be true. No, we live in an open democracy. We live in a participatory democracy where if you have a grievance, you go to your congressman or your senator, and they do exactly what you want. They represent you. Oh, yeah. As long as you have a bag of cash in the Holiday Inn on Highway 15 behind Harry's House of Rubber, you can get anything you want from Congress. Is it any wonder the show is banned in Boston, so to speak? How can you take such alacrity? How can you take it? The answer is you need it, because without it, you'll go crazy altogether. So here we are, and you can call about anything that you want. I mean, there's so many news stories. Who can keep up with them? You go crazy from them. No wonder my family doesn't want to talk to me about politics. They say, stop giving bad news. I say, there's no such thing as good news. There hasn't been good news in ages. In fact, the news business is built on bad news. Otherwise, you wouldn't pay attention. The object is to get you so crazy that you listen for more bad news. You're like a condition. You're conditioned to hear what's bad. What happened? What'd you say? Really? I didn't... Bad? It's terror. Are you kidding? Acid attack. Saudis, madrasas, Wall Street gangsters. I told you, you're saying, sure gangs are bad if they're knocking people off. There's no one's going to say that's good to kill a person. A life is a precious thing. But when you see the gang on Wall Street, what they're getting away with, okay, say like a guy pulls off a heist, the alarm goes off, he robs a jewelry store. They break into a bank or they hold up a house. Terrible. But what do you do when a gang breaks into Wall Street and robs the Treasury and does so every day, day in and day out, for 3 months now? And then when they absorb the money that you gave them, they print more or they take more. It's the biggest theft in the history of the world, and this guy's getting away with it. It's the number one theft in the history of the world. It's more money than you've ever could imagine could be robbed, and nothing's happening. They rob more. Henry Paulson, in my opinion, the bailout plan, which is not working, they're saying it's not working. And the media is going along over and over again. Henry Paulson, Hank Paulson, Henry Paulson, the right man for the right job, Henry Paulson. I told you. I was the first one to tell you he came from Goldman Sachs. Now,
Unto itself, Goldman Sachs doesn't mean anything. It's an investment bank. They were doing well. They were doing well. They did well. Fine, they did well. But when they were doing bad, you got to look into who they are. How did they get there? How did Henry Paulson become the Treasury Secretary? Who told Doofus Bush to appoint Hank Paulson? You have to look into that, too. Guess what? If you find out who actually told the genius George Bush to appoint Henry Paulson to the Treasury Department, it was an advisor named Josh Bolton, right? So, all right, Josh Bolton, terrific. Chief of Staff, Josh Bolton. But it turns out from 1994 to 1999, he was Executive Director for Legal and Government Affairs at Goldman Sachs International in London. So when I said to you this is a government of Goldman Sachs, by Goldman Sachs, and for Goldman Sachs, no wonder they want to ban me in Boston, so to speak. They can't take such alacrity. They can only take guys who wrap themselves in the flag and tell you, a Republican's good, Democrat's bad, Obama's a socialist, the Republicans are not. So what do you call about government socialism? Well, that's a different kind of socialism. That although Obama wants socialism, even though Paulson's practicing outright socialism by buying companies and letting the government run them, that's not real socialism because it's a Republican kind of socialism, which is a different kind of socialism. So that's why I say to you, can you play the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the Goldman Sachs that I played before the election. But you didn't understand that. You didn't understand what I was doing. So I'm watching like the B-Babes on Weather Channel now. I'm feeling much better because I don't watch. I tuned off all of the cable channels. If you think I want to watch Wolf Blitzer in a bad suit, or you think I want to watch, I'm Britt Hume. How are you? I'm Britt Hume. How are you? I'm Britt Hume. What do you do for a living? I'm Britt Hume. How are you? I'm Britt Hume. How are you? I'm Britt Hume. What's a Britt Hume? I don't know, but I'm Britt Hume. Presidents like me. I'm at dinners. I'm a Britt Hume. Although my eyes look like I'm a turtle, I'm Britt Hume. I sleep in my suit at night. I'm Britt Hume. How are you? What are you talking about today? Whatever they give me, whatever the guy with the big glasses in the back writes, I'm Britt Hume. How are you? I don't want to watch these guys anymore. So I'm turning on the Weather Channel because it's refreshing to see girls who wear clothing that, A, is so out of style they wouldn't wear it in Tonga, and, B, two sizes too small so that their bodily, so their hourglass figures, which they don't have, show. Let's put it to you that way. They're ordinary women, and some of them have funny faces. They're never going any further than this. A lot of people think that the Weather Channel is a step to something. It's not. It's not a step to anything. This is it, $39,000 a year. Until you lose your looks altogether, then you go to work for the ASPCA in the euthanasia department while the animal's being put out. You stroke its head like the midget in my book in the laboratory who helped euthanize the mice. The midget who worked for that doctor who fired me and said, go, you're making $300 a month, and if you don't kill the animals, you're making nothing. I said, well, I'll make nothing, and they threw me out of the laboratory. I had to go look for a new job. But it's that leads me to another story, which is that whenever you think it's darkest, it usually is, but sometimes, and it's very rare, it's darkest before the dawn, but generally it's over. Whenever you think it's darkest, as usually is, everything's over. But I have found that in many cases, or in some cases, even though it's very dark, if you got the guts to hang in there, eventually something better will happen. But here's the trick. It's usually many years later. It's not like the next day. And in the Walt Disney version, it's like you get fired and you say, oh my God, that's terrible. And you think that because you listen to Republicans in the radio that, well, use the free market and you're going to go out the next day, you're going to have a chain of businesses. It's like 25 years later and a heart bypass later, then maybe things turn around for you. I'll be right back. Savage. Tears on my pillow. Remember, this song was a biggie. Oh, yeah. We changed the lyrics when I was in high school, which I cannot repeat on the show right now. But all right. I was another age. I was a silly teenager. Today, I'm a grown-up. I'm not quite Britt Hume yet, but... Play it up. It's depressing now. Cancel this song. Now I'm sad now. Give me an upbeat song, will you, for God's sakes? It's like diminishing me now, dragging me into the well of loneliness. I don't want to hear it. I want something.
Yes, I'm the
great. Father loved this, may he rest in peace. Hated rock and roll, but this song he loved.
Pretending that
no, that's not the one he liked. Play it for a minute. I'm trying to remember. He liked the Platters. Oh, no radio. No radio. We're going to work. No radio. Why, Dad? Just work. Work. It's not pleasure. How about on the way in? Can I sit in the car and listen? No. No, get grim. Grim, not like your stupid friends will amount to nothing. You'll be something because you're miserable. And if I see any happiness in you, I'll beat it out of you. So that when you're miserable enough, you'll become a man. All right, Dad, I get it. It's my hormones. It's the steroids and food that did it to me, Dad. Don't talk nonsense. I'm in a nostalgic, playful mood. Think of me as a playful kitty cat today. I'm just a big old kitty cat on a rug. I'm watching that girl on the Weather Channel. Man, I don't know where she got this outfit from. You have to be on the West Coast to see this outfit. Well, like in L.A. in the Van Nuys. Wow, what a bad outfit. I never saw anything like this. Two sizes too small. And a belt on it? I haven't seen a belt like this since Barbara Streisand and Funny Girl. I could do the patriotic. Please, save it for Monday. I love the country. I've never stopped loving the country. I'm still a Boy Scout. I'm still an immigrant son because there's nowhere for me to go. Don't you understand? Our backs are against the wall. Where are you going to go to? Australia? You want to live in the outback and start from ground zero? What do you think? It's a paradise there? Don't be crazy. Things go bad, you'll be speaking Mandarin if you're still allowed to live. Huh. That's all. They could take that country over in 3 seconds if they wanted. They could take it over between dim sum and the main course. That's what I'm worried about, like the future of the world. There is no future. It's like that. Remember that piece, that Touch of Evil, Orson Welles, great movie, black and white. Orson Welles, one of the great voices, great director. You remember he's talking to, I think, Tallulah Bankhead, or do you have Marlena Dietrich, when she's the fortune teller, and he says to her, read my fortune.
You've been reading the cards, haven't you?
I've been doing the accounts.
Come on, read my future for me.
You haven't got any.
What do you mean?
Your future is all used up. Whoa. Why don't you go home?
Oh, my God, I got chills up my spine from that. Now, I could go into this for 25 minutes. I told it to a very famous actor the other night. Older guy, but I told you he was around, came over for a drink, loves me, had no idea that so many people in Hollywood love me. I mean, people you would never believe. I'm not going to mention the names. I had no idea there were so many conservatives here. So we're drinking. He says to me, I said, look, Orson, because he knew Orson Welles. I said, Orson Welles in that scene, I think it's with Marlena Dietrich, or I'm not sure. It could be, yeah, Marlena, okay. So he says to me, he says, read my future, you know, in that macho voice. And she says, I've read your future. It's all used up. And he says, what? What do you mean? Now, you listen to that voice. He goes from macho, strong, confident, to like almost frightened baby-like. Like, sounds like his whole voice broke. What do you mean? You've got to listen to what great acting was and great directing. It doesn't exist like that. Okay, I would say it doesn't. It does, but not to that extent. The subtlety. The subtlety, it's not there anymore. I'm a subtle kind of guy, but you have to listen to understand when you're getting that whole, you know, thing. Monterey, California, Patricia, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I just wanted to let you know that my father at 95 and a half passed away, but for years he told us to speak and listen to you, and we never had time. And so finally, when he was living with us, we started to listen to you, and we are converts, and now our son, who's been listening to you for almost 3 years, is 18, and he is absolutely enamored with you, as am I. So I want to thank you for knowledge.
Well, that's very nice. You know, at first when you started to talk, you had a very, like, silky voice, and I know you're from Monterey. I was thinking of Play Misty for me. I thought it was going to turn into, like, that Clint Eastwood movie with the Jaguar, and you'd be down at the radio station in 2 minutes, but I'm glad that you're married and had a father and a child. I got frightened for a second, Patricia. You're laughing. I'm glad to know. I'm testing. This is my way of testing to see if a person's like a nut on the other side. Patricia, I am sending you psychological nudity on the condition that you tell me to name one story you want to read.
I think it's a story that you tell about the guy with the bad breath, and you have to open up all the windows in the car.
Okay. All right. One-armed Frank. You got it. Why do people remember that? One-armed Frank, well, the breath was. I don't want to go into it, but that guy's breath, I don't think it had anything to do with the fact that he had one arm. I'm not implying that because he had one arm, and it was in those days, that's how you named a person, by their anomaly. In other words, today you hide it. You don't say one-armed Frank today. You say, oh, yeah, Frank's a fine guy. And he might have been, or he might be. But in my day, in my father's day anyway, a guy had one arm. You identified him as one-armed Frank. He didn't mind. It's like a freak. Hi, what do you do? I'm a freak. I'm in Ringling Brothers. What are you? I know what you are. You're a midget or a pinhead. That's all. And it was not complicated. You didn't have to say little people or special bus or anything. But today, you hide everything. Everything is hidden. In fact, if you're brilliant, you have to hide it more. You're like a cursed man if you're a brilliant man in society. You have to pretend you're a normal, you know, like a normal person. Or else you stick out. So what I'm getting back is one-armed Frank had that breath on him, and people remember that. What is my favorite story in it? Is it Tippy the dog would let people in, not out? Fat Pat and Tippy the dog, nope. Happy and Sad Cufflinks, how come nobody remembers that story? No question, if I was a kid in school today, let's say in the sixth grade, they put me on every mind-controlling drug imaginable, I wrote. The mean-faced, clipped-haired women would say, that little savage, he has shining eyes and he talks too much. Put him on Ritalin. Put him on Prozac. Put him in a straitjacket. He shows all the classic signs of maleness. We must kill it. Kill it. Crush it. That's not a bad beginning. I believe most mothers don't even know what their poor boys go through in school. When I was a young boy, my mother bought me a pair of cufflinks. They were a set of the thespian masks, you know. One was a sad face and one was a happy face. I loved those cufflinks. I'd look at them when I was bored in class. On my right cuff, I had the happy face. On the left sleeve, I had the sad face. Some days, I'd switch them around and put the happy face on the left sleeve and the sad face on the right sleeve. Many days, I was so bored, I didn't know what to do. I'd look at these cufflinks for hours in the classroom while the teacher was going on and on and on about George Washington and the Delaware River. I was so bored, I spaced out. I learned that George crossed the Delaware. He saved the country in Trenton. He overthrew the British. I got that the first week of kindergarten. They're still teaching it to me in the fourth grade. In the fifth grade, I learned what a peninsula is. In the sixth grade, it took them a year to teach me what an island was. I couldn't take it. When I got bored, I went with the cufflinks, the happy face, the sad face. When I got bored with the cufflinks, I started pulling the hair out of the skin on my arms. Today, they would have put me on Ritalin or put me in a nut house. They call my lack of attention a disease. It wasn't. It was called boredom. I inflicted pain on myself rather than listen to the teacher bore me one more second. There's more in Happy and Sad Cufflinks. Read it to your children so they don't feel like they're crazy. Just keep them off drugs, please. And keep them away from the school shrink.
Savage.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around 10 o'clock tonight. What is your bad ride?
It is the Savage Nation Friday edition, Rock and Roll Friday. A new story just came out from the Times of London. Barack Obama is warned to beware of a huge threat from Al-Qaeda. Okay, is it fear-mongering, or what, is it going to have another in the Kristallnacht, you know, or what is this? Again? They didn't leave us alone now long enough. They got to threaten us again. I don't know what to believe anymore. I myself don't know. What do you mean, beware of a huge threat? For months now, we're told not to fear a thing. Why? Because it wouldn't be good for the election. Now, because Obama's taking over, we're told, it says security officials fear a spectacular attack during the transition period. Leaders on both sides of the Atlantic brace themselves for an early assault from terrorists. General Michael Hayden, director of the CIA, this week acknowledged that there were dangers during a presidential transition when new officials were coming in and getting accustomed to the real challenges. He added that no real or artificial spike in intercepted transmission of terror suspects had been detected. So why are they putting the red light on all of it, the green, whatever? Bush has repeatedly described the acute vulnerability of the U.S. during a transition. Okay? Now, if you look back, there may be some truth in this, in the sense that Al-Qaeda's first assault on the WTC occurred little more than a month after Clinton became president in 93. And there was an alleged attempt to bomb Glasgow Airport in Gordon Brown's first days in Downing Street, and there was a London nightclub attack that was narrowly thwarted soon after Brown became the prime minister. Now, Lord West of Spithead, the Home Office Secretary in England, spoke recently of a huge threat, saying there is another great plot building up again and we're monitoring this. Now, I don't understand why all of a sudden, and many people are completely jaded, they don't believe a word of this anymore, and they fear that it's fear-mongering because we've heard it too many times. It's like the boy who cried wolf. So I don't know whether to believe it. As Barack Obama's warned to beware of a huge threat from Al-Qaeda. Because during the transition period, apparently, we're weaker. Why we're weaker, I don't know. Whether they go to sleep? Like a changing of a crew on a ship. Let's talk about that for a minute. When one shift gets off duty and another one comes on duty, is the shift is the ship more vulnerable? It shouldn't be. I mean, if I were planning how to run a warship, I wouldn't let one shift disappear altogether and another shift come on. There has to be some transition where there's overlap in the administration, which of course there is. Just because the president is changing and he's going to change many of the guys at the top, the middle management is not changing at all, not for a very long period of time. So I'm not so sure this is anything other than, okay, here we go again. You know, I hope so. I hope my cynicism is true. I mean, I hope so. I wish they would get him already and hang him already and, you know, send his head around America. I can't take this anymore. I hope Obama gets Osama. I hope Obama gets Osama bin Laden. Let him have that victory. That would be great if he could do that, you know. Let him do that already. He said he's going to get him. Let him get him already. I'd be very happy. I'd be the first to applaud. How come they can't get him with all of the military and high-flying drones and satellites? And I watched the Military History Channel. I stopped watching it. I couldn't take it anymore. The weapons they show, these trillion-dollar weapons that we don't use. In fact, we don't use them. They told the Marines not to have anti-Muslim fundamentalist literature or on their bumper sticker. I never saw anything like it. What kind of military is this that you can't even talk about the enemy, the Islamic fanatics, but you want them to go kill them? I don't understand this. How can you train boys to go kill the enemy if you only identify the enemy? That's the part that I just can't put two and two together. It's insanity. It's mind-bending. Thomas in Tucson, Arizona, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, it really is, Dark, Michael. And God, I'll tell you, I turned 80 in July, and listening to you is just the only hope that I have. And you must realize what a power you have with the people in the country. I listen to you almost every night. And get some sense of well, maybe, you know, maybe somebody will protect us, because, you know, that America, as I grew up in the 30s in Detroit under the threat of Hitler, always being afraid and praying and going to church and all that stuff, we always had the essence of America, the Bill of Rights, everything that you talk about. And you must, if I may be so impertinent, I don't mean to be, but you must realize what a power you have. I hear it every time I hear the people calling in.
I don't have any power. I'm one man alone sitting in front of a microphone who is completely unknown in America, except amongst my audience. And the reason I say that is that here I win a major victory against a group that's quite suspicious in the opinions of many very intelligent people, and it's in a liberal court, and Fox doesn't report it, Limbaugh doesn't report it, Hannity doesn't report it, O'Reilly doesn't report it. So what hope is there?
That's right. That's what I say. You're the
in other words, if they will put their careers or their biases against me above the interests of the American people, tell me how we're going to survive.
I know. That's what I'm worried about. And that's why I wait on the line to tell you how.
Well, let me put it this way. Let's say it was turned around and one of those other hosts had a lawsuit against CARE and they lost. And then the CARE sued them for almost $200,000. And then they brought a countersuit claiming that they shouldn't get any money. And they won a victory against CARE from a liberal judge. I would report it on this show because I would say that's good news for all of us. What kind of small-mindedness is going on here that they won't even report news like that, Thomas?
They're selfish, and the thievery and the lying and the cheating and everything, it's just overwhelming. And I live with that every day, and I don't, you know, I look for some strength and some power. And I get it from listening to you, and I know from listening to the other people that call in. They do, too.
Well, I don't realize it. The truth is I'm an ordinary guy with an extraordinary opportunity, and I use it. But when the microphone goes off, I'm just another guy with, the ordinary hopes, dreams, desires, complaints, aches, and pains. You know what I'm saying? I don't walk around saying I'm Brett Hume. I'm Brett Hume. I'm Wolf Blitzer. I'm this. I don't feel any of that. I have no such feeling. I mean, I talk to the gardener. I talk to the cook. I talk to the... Whatever, I'm just another guy on the street here. What am I going to be? I'm not running for any. I'm not running for anything. I mean, I don't want to run for anything. I'll leave that to the professional politicians. I thank you very much, Thomas. Tennessee, JD, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, my friend?
Hey, Mike, long time, man. I've been listening to you for I don't know how long. Can never get through because you're the hardest working man in show business. But
love it, love it, love it. But, what made you call? What made you call tonight?
One Arm Frank is the number one stunner in your book. Man, I was in the military, and I had a guy that I knew, man, and his breath was so stinking, man. I'm talking about his car smelled like his breath. The interior in his car smelled like his breath. Even in the cold, we was trying to ride with him in his car. My car broke down. We had to let the windows down in his car.
And wait a minute. You're not saying he had one arm, are you?
You couldn't take it. And when you roll the windows up, it's like it was embedded in his interior. Everything. Man, you could smell him 10 feet away from him. That's how bad.
But I want to ask you something. I'm not being cruel in any way. Did he have one arm?
No, sir. No, sir. But I'll never forget the guy. This guy was from North.
No, but he had a breath on him that I say was a medicinal problem. Like you had to go to a specialist to cure this.
I don't know what, Mike, but his breath smelled like a sewer. It smelled like a bad. I remember.
Well, JD, did you get the book yet? Did you? JD, can you hear me? Did you get a copy of the book yet?
No, sir. Yes, Rena.
Well, you're going to. Hold it. Don't go away. Stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy, but I want to read you and ask you if this is what you're talking about. I said, in those days. Blah, blah, blah. So one-armed Frank was a very sweet guy, but he had sick breath. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, and then there are very bad breaths, and then there are medicinal problems. This one had to be solved with a medicine that hasn't been invented yet. I remember one winter my old man was dropping Frank off at his home. Frank was in the passenger seat, and I sat in the back. It was minus 4 degrees out, but we had a ride with all the windows open. Did you ever meet a person like this? Whenever he spoke, the car filled with a nauseous fume. Are we going past the meat factory? No. Did we run over a small furry creature that got caught in the muffler and the smell shot up through the floorboard? Did I step on something? Nope. I mean, I took my shoes off. No, but it was only Frank talking. Okay, JD, no, don't go away. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Everybody loves that story. They don't understand that those, because I think that was before mouthwashes. Nobody, you know, JD, that's another interesting side story here. In my father's generation, a man would not use a mouthwash or a deodorant. You know that.
Yes, sir. He got the tissue.
If a guy used an underarm deodorant in my father's day and a mouthwash, you know that they felt he belonged in San Francisco.
Man, you're the best, Mike. You're number one in the nation.
No, I mean, if they caught a guy and they went in his bathroom, let's say they had to use the John, and they saw a roll-on deodorant and a mouthwash, they never talk to him again.
Man, I haven't seen this guy in years, but I'll never forget him because of his breath. Man, I've never smelled the first
Hey, JD, let me ask you something. Are you a musician by any chance?
No, sir. No, sir. But I do.
Well, you sure have a musician's sense of humor. I got to tell you that. JD, a free copy, Psychological Nudity, going out to you in Tennessee because you made me feel so good and laugh so hard. I got to tell you. That's a great call. That is a great call. You see, we can transcend politics, race, generations, all with what? The miracle of humor, the miracle of communication. It is a miracle. It's a miracle, and I'm gifted. I know it's a gift. It goes back, again, not to dwell on the past, but how did it start? And this is not in the new book, but it should be, because it's a very important story. I've told it once in 15 years. First grade, New York, inner city school. Play, auditorium. Now, I don't know if you know, there are some people who are terrified to give a speech in front of them. These can be tough guys, tough kids, murder, tough as nails. You put them in front of an audience, their face turns red. They can't say a word. They can't say anything. It's a gift. If you can do it, it's a gift, okay? It doesn't make you better than the other guy. It happens to be a thing you have. It's like another guy can run, jump, throw a basketball, whatever, fly a plane. But talking in front of an audience, so... I didn't know I could do it. How do you know if you could do it? You have no idea. But although we were poor, my mother wanted me to look good, so she bought me a little blue suit. It was probably $9. This was before Dead Man's Pants, when we had less money. She bought me an actual suit that fit in my size. It was probably in Bonnie's Boys Town, wherever she saved money. So I had a little blue suit. So the teacher said to me, look, you're the only kid in the whole school with a suit. I said, I don't know. So she's, get the suit, bring it in, you're going to be the announcer for the assembly. I got up, I saw a sea of people, and I wasn't frightened. I enjoyed it. It was like a sea of faces. It's an interesting thing looking at an audience if you don't panic. It just looks like a sea, like a little waves chopping around in there. They don't look like people to you at that point. Anyway, I learned that I could talk to an audience, and that's how it started. That's all there was to it. And it was a gift that I had at that time, and that's all there was to it. Now I'm going to move up one grade, two grade, three grade, four grade. Now... I was a short kid, and I had gone to school early, then I skipped a grade. So I was younger and smaller than most of the kids. So if I'm in elementary school and it goes up to the eighth grade in those days, there was no junior high. It was like 1 through 8, then high school, 9 through 12. There was no intermediary school where you learn how to have, you know, sex with whatever. In other words, it was right into the eighth grade. Now picture this. So in this school of 1 through 8, K through eight, you, not K, it was 1 through 8. There was no K. The K, you were home already with the grandmother who didn't speak English in kindergarten. There was no such thing as kindergarten then because the mothers didn't work. You sat around and you watched them make Jell-O or whatever. So 1 through 8, you had kids now 5 years old in the first grade. And in the eighth grade, you might have a dummy who was also left back because of truancy and bad behavior who might be 15. So you had kids ranging in age from 5 to 15 in the same school. Now picture me. I go in the bathroom. I'm in the fourth, fifth grade, and I have to go to the men's room. This was like, it was like terror, blackboard jungle. There were no monitors. There were no cops, no nothing. You might have a 14, 15-year-old, like, giant maniac in that bathroom, and you're this little kid who's got to go in there and do your thing. So I had to get, figure out how to go in there and come out with, like, not being killed. So I found out that I'd go in, and right away I'd arrest the guys. They were usually slower. Okay, admittedly, they might have been violent, but they were slow with it. So you had to, like, charm them rapidly. So I'd go in, a short little kid, younger. I have to use the bathroom. How do I get out of this terrible thing? I still have nightmares to this day. I don't like public bathrooms. I hate them. Really, it goes back to that trauma. Go in, look the big guy in right in the eye. I'm not going to threaten him. He'd kill me. I tell him a joke. I'd look right in the eye and point at him and say, hey, listen. And while he's like mesmerized, like snake charming, with the other hand, I'm taking care of the urinal, doing my stuff. By the time the idiot figured out I was giving him a double talk, I was out of the bathroom. That's how I learned to tell a joke. I'll be back.
Savage.
As this hour comes to a close, for me, of course, it's the end of a long week. For some of you, there's another hour or two of the show, or it appears all over the country at different times, so I really can't talk about time. But the fact is, it's been a phenomenal week for me, a great victory, Michael Savage versus CAIR. They were denied a motion for attorney's fees that were almost $180,000. And the important thing for you to remember is that this judge threw out their claim, just threw it out entirely. She didn't give them 50%, 20%, she gave them nothing. And she is in a liberal court in San Francisco. She's a federal judge appointed by Bill Clinton. That is news. That should be all over the media. I don't mean the biggest story of the day, but it's certainly, in a big story manner, a real story. Vermont town grows divisible over Pledge of Allegiance. Bush this, Obama that. Big deal. This is news. Yet it's found nowhere but on MichaelSavage.com, linked up from WorldNet Daily as well. My friend Joe posted it. Andrew Breitbart posted it. Can you explain to yourself how these people who did not talk about it or post it can retain any credibility with you, the listener? I'd like you to think very seriously about it. That if the forget the liberal media. I'm talking about the so-called other side of the aisle. If they are not reporting this, ask yourselves a few questions. You'll come to a few answers that only you can answer and only you can ask. That's all. Okay? That's it? I don't want to beat it up. It's been a heck of a week for me. And I've enjoyed it. I'm glad that you're with me. The book, as I say, is almost gone, the first printing, first edition. I had no idea it would move like this, and I've ordered a second rush printing. It'll be a first edition, second printing, and that's fine. Just life is what it is, and we go on, and we're going to have Obama as the president late January, and the women on with the Weather Channel will still be wearing bad clothing, and we'll still be laughing and having fun. What are you going to do? You can't let the world, you know, beat you up. I want to go back to something that came at the beginning of the show today. A young guy called, and he said, you ought to do a whole hour, a whole show on how to raise children. And I said, look, you know, just love them and really love them, and everything will work out. Just do the right thing that way. But there's a lot of things that could be said about a lot of topics that sometimes are best left, you know, unsaid. There's no hard and fast rules about raising children. As there are no hard and fast rules about good talk shows. There are no rules about great music. There are no rules about a great sportsman. There are no rules about so many things that really are an art, not a science. And that's why I say raising a child, going back to that very important point, is both an art and a science, but it's the toughest job in the world in the sense that you have to be consistent. And given that we all have ups and downs in our life, and we have moods in our life, and we have terrible things that happen to us that we want to shield from our children, the best thing is to not shield them from your children. I'll tell you that as well. Now, there's a conflict in here in that when a couple fights, very often they're told not to let the children hear or to see it. I don't believe that that's a good idea. It doesn't mean you have to drag them into the screaming and the yelling, which, of course, is very Mediterranean anyway to begin with. I don't know that the old school guys hid when the wife and husband had a screamer that the kid was suddenly sheltered. I think they yelled and screamed, and if the kid heard it, he heard it. That's what went on. That's all. And then life went on. Somehow the next generation, they got married, they yelled and screamed, they stayed together. Today, because the kid is not exposed to a couple having it out with each other, and then the next day they're together, the kids, if they get in a relationship, 2 months later, if someone raises a voice to them, they break up already. Why? He yelled at me. Or he looked at me the wrong way. We're getting a divorce. Why is that? Because they think it's abnormal for the husband to look at him the wrong way to yell at them, or the vice versa. She looked at me or she yelled at me. She didn't respect me. I'm divorcing her. She's not a good wife. That's nonsense. That's why I say, look, you know, I have my own way of looking at things, and maybe it doesn't apply in today's world. But maybe it should apply in today's world. Maybe you should give some thought to some of the things I'm telling you, which is fundamentally, let's get back down to brass tacks. As in my book, Psychological Nudity, it's mainly perspectives from another generation, I might say. But these are our values and stories that transcend generations. They transcend trends. There's no trend in what I'm telling you, whether it's on the show or in the book. It's my life, plain and simple, spread out before you. Take it for what it is. They're very entertaining, and that's why I try to do the same thing on the show. Today was one of those out-of-the-ballpark shows. I can guarantee you, you loved it today. I know you did because I loved it. I didn't drag. Why? I had no more Obama, no more McCain, no more Bush, no more election, no more fears, no more nonsense. I'm free. Free at last. Free as a bird. God bless America. God bless talk radio. God bless the founding fathers. And good luck.
Savage.